Each story in this podcast is a personal account. It is a unique story and a recollection of one's memories.
Who Will Remember Us? By Nicole Guidicelli.
Daniel is a French pied noir. He is also an Australian citizen. He was born in 1951 in Merselkébir, a small village in the department of Oranie. His life in Algeria is a happy one until the end. He has somehow kept the accent from his homeland. It is an accent I haven't come across with the other persons I have interviewed throughout this project. He also draws a parallel between the French colonization of Algeria and the English one in Australia.
My pied noir accent is still very strong. Yes, I do have to admit that. It hasn't changed much at all because I have spent very little time in France. I have lived in Algeria for the first 16 years of my life. And during that time, my only contact with people was with the pied noir population. Australia now has been my home for the last 52 years. During that time, my brain has gradually adapted and adopted the English language and the Anglo-Saxon culture. In doing so, my way of speaking French has remained exactly the pied noir way. These days, when I return to France and speak French with friends, family, most people pick up that pied noir accent is still very strong. How is it possible that after all that time spent in Australia, you still have retained that accent, they ask me. Well, I just don't wish to lose it. It is the living witness of my past life, a happy life, and I'm certainly not ashamed to call myself a pied noir.
Daniel's ancestors are Spanish of humble origins. They were stonecutter, shepherd, and housewife. They decided to travel to Algeria, a country with prospects of a better life. One of his ancestors starts to make and sell charcoal. Another decides to cut hair. The family settles in the new country and they open a barber shop and a bakery.
Life in Merselkébir, which is the village where I was born, was truly idyllic. I have nothing but wonderful memories of my youth in that part of the world. The sea, of course, was an integral part of the village, and it had a significant place in everyone's life. There was, of course, the sunshine and the purest of blue skies everywhere you looked. In the small streets, one could hear the sounds of the Arab vendors who came to the village every day selling all sorts of produce. Some had some figs, lucerne for the rabbits, pastries, wild asparagus, snails, chickens, prickly pears, etc., etc. The street were also full of life throughout the day. In addition to the vendors, as you walked along, coming out of the windows, one could always hear the sound of housewives singing in Spanish or Italian as they went about their daily tasks. There was also the church bells. They played a big part in the life of the village. They called the faithful to Mass and announced events such as baptism, weddings, funerals, etc. The entire community met at least once a week for Sunday Mass. Everyone knew everyone else. There was practically no radio, no television at home. People simply created their own entertainment. At night, for instance, after dinner, most neighbors used to meet outside their home. As they sat on their chair, they spoke to each other about all sorts of things, while the children played soccer in the street because there were practically no cars to disrupt the game. Yes, it was an unforgettable but truly wonderful and memorable part of my life, a life which has sadly and unfortunately gone forever. There was an Arab community around us. It was settled on the outskirts of the village. But throughout the day, we all went about our daily lives together. The Pied-Noirs bought what the Arabs were selling, and the Arabs did the same with the Pied-Noirs. A large portion of the Arab population in Mazet Kebir bought their daily bread at the family bakery. And once a week, my uncles had reserved a time slot for the Arab housewives who wished to cook the round and thick breads they couldn't cook at home because of their big size. As the breads came out of the oven, their smell was just simply delightful. It's a very particular smell, but it still lingers in my brain. All the ladies knew that I loved their bread, and without even asking, they always had a piece of that freshly cooked and warm bread for me. It was simply heaven on earth. Our lives, as you can see, were completely intertwined. In the bakery, my uncles employed an Arab man whose name was Chato. Whenever I went to visit, I always kissed Chato and my uncles. He was practically part of the family. There was no difference at all for me, other than the fact that he spoke a different language, was from another culture, and practiced a different religion. I often spoke to him or the Arab people in Arabic, and it was a very friendly and affectionate relationship. But the Arabs were part of our daily life, as you can see. We were together and we saw each other each and every day. We really never felt as colonialists, which is a term often used by the French population to label the Pied-Noirs. Most of us, and we certainly do, come from a very humble beginning, and what those families and my family have achieved during that time in Algeria has been the result of hard work, sacrifice, and persistence. Well, I must admit, there was, of course, a certain class of people who were colonialists. They controlled large expanses of land, and for us, these people were part of a different and somewhat superior class who, well, we always felt, didn't always treat or pay their Arab employees the way they should have. We never belonged with those people, nor agreed with their methods.
Approximately 2 years before the Algerian independence, life begins to change. Bit by bit, the war becomes part of Daniel's life.
I remember some evenings where, coming from the Arab village, one could hear the beat of the drums and the incessant you-yous, you-you-you-you-you-you-you. These events at that time marked me very deeply because I had never heard anything like it before. In response, of course, the Pied-Noirs organized what they called concert de casserole, saucepan concerts. People went up on the flat roofs of their houses with pots and pans and banged them with a stick while singing Algérie française, Algérie française, which means simply French Algeria. My father, like a large number of the village men, joined the recently formed Territorial. It was a semi-army security group assigned to reassure and appease the Pied-Noir population. It was the first time I saw my father dressed in army greens, and that surprised me a great deal. A number of signs were painted on the walls of the village all over the place. Some were written OAS, the secret Pied-Noir army organization. Others, of course, were FLN, the Algerian Liberation Organization. We also began to hear explosions at night, numerous gunshots, and a few killings began to take place. One of these, for example, was the massacre of the Ortega family. They were the caretakers of the village football club. It was a horrible moment for us, and it all affected us very, very deeply. That same day, of course, the OAS inflicted the same atrocities to the Arabs. Some of the days I also remember going to school a couple of times and seeing traces and even small pools of blood on the ground. That was, of course, the result of the recent killings. One day, my family installed a steel portal to stop any unwelcomed evening intrusions at the entrance of the apartment building where we lived. People also had started to fix steel bars at their windows to protect themselves. My father, who was a keen spear fisherman, always went to bed at night with his two spear fishing guns fully armed by his bedside. There were also spot searches by the French army in the middle of the night because that became quite a frequent thing. The aim was to find illegal arms which the Pied-Noir population had purchased for protection. Things were changing and something was happening, but my parents always kept reassuring me that it would soon be over and life would return back to normal. A few months before the independence, all my Arab school friends, with whom I had practically done all my primary education, suddenly stopped attending school. This created a big hole in our school community. When one attends school with his mates for the best part of 5 or 6 years, such a change is most unusual and deeply disturbing. I have a school photo taken a few weeks before the independence, in July 1962, where there were only Pied-Noir students on that photo. All our Arab mates were missing. I often look at that photo, and each time all I see is half a class. The other half, well, had simply disappeared practically almost overnight.
The war is over and Algeria has gained its independence. The French forces remain in Merzel-Kébir. They begin to dismantle the installations of the harbour.
My first memory of the independence was a huge parade by the Arab population. They were brandishing the Algerian flag, openly this time, and ran in most of the streets of the village chanting Dehya Jezair, Dehya Jezair, meaning Algerian Algeria. That had never happened before. This is the time when I began to witness a wave of panic within the Pied-Noir population. There had been, as I mentioned earlier, a few killings, a few people from the village who had disappeared, but the tension increased dramatically at that particular time. The saying, la valise ou le cercueil, the suitcase or the coffin began to spread, and it was on everyone's mind. People were rapidly packing the few belongings they could take with them, and they were abandoning their houses in order to seek refuge and safety in the harbour, which was still controlled by the French forces. Some people, before leaving, were taking their furniture and all their personal belongings, which they couldn't take with them. They gathered them, these belongings had been gathered over a lifetime, and they just piled it all up and set fire to it in the street. People could leave the country, but they were only allowed to take a couple of suitcases per person. So they were quite limited in that respect. There was that awful feeling of increasing hatred towards the Arab population. The Pieds-Noirs were being chased out of their country, and they certainly weren't going to leave anything to the Arabs. I saw so many traumatized faces during those painful days after the independence. Women and men crying uncontrollably, and a never-ending queue of distraught people heading to the harbour for a quick passage to France. My grandfather lived in a villa looking down the harbour, and from that terrace, and for many endless days, I had a full view of the human drama unfolding in front of me. It was summer, and under the hot, burning sun, people I had known my whole life, friends, elderly people, babies, schoolmates, to whom I hadn't even had time to say goodbye, were leaving, never to be seen again. They were leaving Merzel-Kébir and heading for Marseille, on the other side of the Mediterranean Sea, for a future no one really dared thinking about.
Unlike the vast majority of Pieds-Noirs, Daniel's father's family decides to stay in Algeria. They remained there until 1967.
At that time, my family ran a number of businesses. We had three barber shops, a bakery, and a mercery. We also owned some real estate, which included private and rental properties. Our Arab friends strongly suggested we should remain in Algeria and not follow the wave of panic. They assured us that we would be safe, that Algeria was our country, and that they would take care of us. My father and his brother each had a barber shop in Oran, the capital of Oranie. Oran was situated about roughly 7 kilometers east of Merzel-Kébir. Their professional situation quickly changed for them also, because when the vast majority of their clientele disappeared over a relatively short period of time, between 1962 and 1967, the makeup of their clientele changed. Gradually, Algerian clients began to frequent their establishments. In Merzel-Kébir, my grandfather's clientele also changed, but there it was the army personnel which had been sent to dismantle the navy base that replaced the Pieds-Noirs clientele. The only difference for us was that Algeria was no longer French, the village had some new inhabitants, and the naval base would at some point return to the Algerian authorities. We also knew that the French army personnel who rented the family apartments would one day leave the village. We, however, had no intention at that time to leave Algeria. All the businesses, including the bakery, continued to prosper, and our relations with the Arab population was as friendly as ever. An unfortunate event precipitated our departure from Algeria. Sometime in 1967, my father had transferred a sum of money from Algeria to France, which at the time was an illegal procedure. The Algerian authorities found out about this matter, and my father was swiftly expelled from the country. Within a few weeks, I again lost the world I had reconstructed for myself since the independence. My friends, my routine, my school, everything was gone once again. We decided to settle in Toulouse. It was an easy decision to make. My mum already had three sisters who lived there since 1962, and she hadn't seen them since the independence. When we left Algeria in 1967, we certainly didn't endure the harsh condition that the Pieds Noirs faced when they arrived in France in 1962. One of my aunties had already found a house for us to live in, and we could ship our furniture and personal belongings before leaving the country. It was a much less traumatic moment for us. This didn't, however, ease the sense of loss and total disorientation I felt when we landed in France. In a very short space of time, I went from a sunbathed, small seaside village in Algeria to a large city, far away from the sea, and with a completely different climate. I knew I was in France, I spoke the language, I had a French education, but the change had been so sudden and so complete, I never felt so lost and out of place than on that day. The first thing we did once in Toulouse was to regroup with the family we had lost in 1962. We knew no one at that time. My aunties surely had met a few local people since their arrival, but we all felt safer within the immediate family around us. The only time I had any contact with the local population was at school, where I continued my education. My strong Pieds Noirs accent obviously didn't help my integration in this new environment. I often felt as if I weren't exactly welcome at school. It was hard feeling that way. It would have been a lot more difficult and painful for the Pieds Noirs who arrived in 62, I'm sure. 5 years later, the local population and the Pieds Noirs by then had had an opportunity to cohabitate, got to know each other, and for some, had the time to form new relationships. The same sentence, however, always came into conversation. Oh, so you are a Pieds Noirs. We may have been guilty to think that way, but we always felt that undertone of someone being scrutinized, judged, wondering if we were in the right place, if we really belonged in France, or simply should be somewhere else.
During the 3 years that Daniel spends in Toulouse, he doesn't let the city get to him. He applies and is granted a visa to emigrate to Australia.
When I boarded the ship in Genoa for Australia at the age of 19, well, I was once again taking another start for in my life. I had never been totally on my own. I'd never really taken full responsibility for my actions and decisions. But that time, it seemed, it was like I was shedding my past life completely. I was spreading my wings and taking my first flight towards a new future. And, well, when I think back, My decision to leave and go so far away from everything and everyone seems to me almost irresponsible and practically dangerous these days. There was, however, a strong energy and force in me, giving me the strength and the assurance that it would all be okay. That energy, I think, may perhaps have been part of my DNA. My Spanish ancestors probably felt exactly the same way when they too left their country. They jumped on a ship in search of a new horizon and a new life. Well, 150 years later, it was my turn to go, to revive that pioneering spirit which had served us so well until now. As we sailed for Australia, the ship passed the Algerian coast, a place I had left only 3 short years earlier. I remember I was standing on the deck in silence, watching my birthplace slowly fading away. The memories of the people I had lost and all that I had lived there came flooding back into my head. And I clearly remember thinking at that very moment, would I ever be back to Algeria now that I'm going so far away? Interestingly enough, I strangely felt totally at home as soon as I landed in Australia, in Brisbane, on the Australian east coast. There was again the sea everywhere around. The sky was blue when the sun was shining. As for the Australians, their lifestyle and their attitude in life was surprisingly similar to the Pied-Noir culture. In fact, I think that the Australians are, for me, a kind of English Pied-Noir. They love the outdoor life under the sun. They love their outdoor barbecues. They love meeting with people. They've got a carefree attitude. And above all, they are really friendly and warm people. And the welcome I received when I arrived was just so totally unexpected and absolutely fantastic. I remember as I was taking my first look at Brisbane outside the railway station with my 2 suitcases, a fellow went by, and having realized I was a new arrival, he waved at me and happily said, "Welcome to Australia, mate." I must admit I was totally overwhelmed by such warmth and friendliness. And ever since, everyone I have met over there in Australia has always had this kind of attitude towards me. I never, even for a moment, would have imagined that such a thing could happen. At the beginning, I was too busy adopting to my new country its culture and language, and I didn't have much time to learn its history and how Australia came to be. Back then, the original inhabitants of the country, the Aboriginal owners of the land, and the white Australian population lived fairly separate lives, not unlike how the Pied-Noirs lived with the Arabs back in Algeria. It's only with time, however, that I began to learn what happened between the Aboriginal people and the English population now ruling the country. In doing so, I think I became increasingly aware of the injustice and the wrongs that the English settlers committed. But it is also at that time that I began to realize that despite the different circumstances, a similar situation had occurred in Algeria. When the French arrived in Algeria, they developed the country, they built dams, roads, large cities, etc. The country quickly grew rich with its agricultural production and the discovery of important reserves of fossil energy. I believe it's a pity, however, that the Arabs weren't able or allowed to prosper from all this wealth in a similar manner as the Pied-Noir population. No. in Australia nowadays, an ever-increasing number of the Aboriginal population has successfully taken a rightful place in the Australian society. It has been a long, painful and very arduous road, and the full integration still has a way to go. But it is happening, and this is what's really a good thing. I think a similar situation could and should have taken place in Algeria. The Arabs should have been involved in the country's political, commercial, judicial, and educational life right at the beginning. In doing so, I'm convinced that we could still be living together and sharing the same love for that wonderful country.
Algeria, France, Australia, what place do all these countries hold in Daniel's heart and his mind?
I hold a dual citizenship. I'm both Australian and French. I was brought up and educated in the French system, but when I come to France, I no longer feel it is my country. I don't feel at home there. After 52 years in Australia, yes, I do feel as an Australian. I have been adopted not only by the white population, but also, and more importantly for me, by the Nunakul Yagara Aboriginal tribe of the Minjeliba Island, with whom I have worked on a number of projects and have now become part of their people. They have adopted me in their tribe, and this is an honor and a privilege I will cherish forever. In Australia, the European history is generally not well known. For most Australians, I come from France, but that's about all. What happened in France and Algeria is practically unknown. I feel, to tell you the truth, as much Algerian as I do Australian. When I had the opportunity to return to Algeria in 2010, it was a very powerful moment for me. The country was telling me I was born there and would always belong there, and this feeling would always stay with me. I'm quite sure that had events turned out differently and had I been able to remain in Algeria, I would have had no hesitation to adopt the Algerian citizenship along with the French. My first trip to Algeria was made possible when my childhood and school friend Kader found me on the internet. He simply told me that I had to return to the country and see him again. I didn't hesitate and traveled there shortly afterwards. That first trip in 2010 started a series of 6 additional visits. A number of my cousins who weren't born there or had only heard about the country from their parents were keen to discover the place of their ancestors. It was obviously a huge honor for me to bring the family to Algeria over those next 6 years. On one of those visits, I took some of my father's ashes, who had recently passed away, and I scattered them at his favorite spearfishing spot at the Rocher de la Vieille, not far from Mers El Kébir. That day, my friend Kader came with me. It was a very powerful and emotional moment for me to be able to return him where he was born and lived. As I scattered his ashes in the sea, Kader just said a few words. He said, "Rest in peace, Jacinto." Jacinto was my father's name. "Rest in peace, Jacinto, in your country." This is above all how I feel about Algeria. Everyone over there since my return has told me that I was at home in Algeria. "You are always welcome here and you should have never left us. We were all so happy together." I have always felt Each time I have visited Algeria between 2010 and 2018, this is also how I feel about Australia. I have never felt such closeness with France. Interestingly, I feel a lot more at home in Spain, for instance, where I have only holidayed there a few weeks. I think it could simply be because my ancestors originally come from Spain. There is a wonderful Australian expression that says, well, shit happens, but then you get up and you get going. I believe the first Spanish pioneers who immigrated to Algeria would have had to face many, many difficult moments. This determination to overcome has been passed on to the future generation of Pieds Noirs. To know and to remember where we come from is most important to me.
A heartfelt thank you to Daniel for sharing his story. Jean-Christophe Trey has produced this episode, Pascal Simoni the music. The episode is available on every internet media platform and YouTube. You can also contact me at quisesesouviendra@gmail.com. I dedicate this podcast to my parents and to each and every person who has been uprooted.